It's time to kick it off, yeah. It's time to do a great MMA show. It's here with topics you like out of the desert where the sun gets hot. So drop on into that MMA spot.
Thank you for joining me today on the MMA show. We have a very serious topic that we're talking about today. This week we're talking about suicide, and I have a wonderful lady who's joining us today, and you might remember her. Her name is Cynthia Hyatt. She's a psychotherapist here in the Valley, and I just wanted to ask her to come and give her expertise.
We make it as simple as we can to understand this very complex issue. And so we know there's free will. We do. But we don't know where they lost some of their free will along the way. And so it isn't necessarily at that moment where they're killing themselves, that's when they made the choice. Mm-hmm. The choice happened back a lot farther. And it takes, some people can make that choice and not do it for a year.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. They just walk around to plan.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Because what happens is, if they know they have the choice to kill themselves, that helps them stay.
Huh.
And so it's this bizarre, twisted, kind of tangled process. So when they decide to, when they finally actually do it, it has been in the works. It isn't like somebody just wakes up and morning, goes, I can't take it, and I'm going to kill myself.
Hmm.
It's not like a truly impulsive issue. All right? It's an impulse when they finally do it, but it's not just like out of the blue, okay? And so all along the way, they've been losing some free will.
See, that,
over.
I'm glad he said something like that, because I didn't even think that was, that even happened, and that kind of like puts a light bulb in my mind now. I'm like, wow, you could lose your ability to have free will. Perhaps that's true. Do you think with drugs and stuff and
well, any kind
alcohol
of,
or
any kind of substance, any kind of altered state, mm-hmm. which is disconnecting from self, causes me to lose some of my free will and causes me to be open, certainly, to darkness. A lot
sure.
more open to darkness, and so I'm going to get a lot more attack. I'm going to get a lot more relentless pressure because I've opened myself up.
Mm. That makes sense.
So there's a whole different process about suicide, and that's why what we, even if we think of the analogy that you're saying with the parents, see, this is how God says, regardless of the choice, they're still His child. So the free will that a saved person has is not whether or not they're still the kid. It's how they're going to experience God. How much they're going to experience God,
mm-hmm.
how long they're going to experience God, what they're going to experience when they meet Him, you know, when they die. And so, but we don't have the free will to stop being His child.
That's true. I agree with that.
Just like you.
I just don't want anyone to blame God on this and hate Him now because the person they love so much chose to die and God didn't do anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't believe that God, in my case with my cousin, I don't believe God didn't do anything. I think he tried to intervene several times.
Yes, yes.
But I think it came to a place where did my cousin want the help or not? And sometimes you can't see it when you're in that grieving process, but
you have to understand that the spiritual dynamic of suicide and entertaining that thought is an altered state in and of itself. So it's kind of like if you had a person drunk out of their mind in front of you, and you tried to talk to them about getting sober and going to AA that night,
mm-hmm.
okay, you'd have to wait till they sobered up, right?
That's right, yeah.
Well, suicide, that kind of thinking, is a delusional type of reality, where I think this is actually a good idea, and this might not bother people too much, and this may be a good solution for me, and it's the only one for me. Okay, that is not sanity. That's not sober-minded thinking. So when they are hearing people wanting to give them help, if they're in that delusional type of thinking, it's like trying to talk to a drunk person about going to an AA meeting.
That makes sense.
Right? You know, you're saying all the right things, you're doing all the right things, you are very present, and they're not. And so they're hearing it through this weird, like, you know how you think about kaleidoscopes?
Yes.
And you're seeing one, and you hand it to the person, and it goes one click off,
right.
and they see a completely different thing?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what that kind of, that idea of a kaleidoscope, a paradigm, a filter, okay? What they're seeing life through is like 2, 3, 4, 5 clicks off of like a kaleidoscope.
Wow.
And so trying to get back in and make a connection with that person so that you can start to untangle that, because suicidal thinking is very tangled. It is a slow process. It is a one click at a time. The way I perceive whatever event happened to me, this person let me down, this person said this to me, I look like this, I'm perceived this way. It's all these little perceptions and choices that lead to that big tipping point.
Wow. How do you suggest loved ones deal with something like this? And it's really hard to swallow that pill.
Well, the only way to get through that, you have to go through the grief and loss process so that you can forgive yourself, forgive the person, and forgive God. And accept that there are things that are beyond our comprehension. And we learn, as we go through that process, to trust God for who He is. We don't trust God because of what we see. We don't trust God because He's doing it the way that makes sense to us. We have to come to this point, and what I tell clients all the time, God gave me this saying that helps me reorient myself, is I just say, I either trust Him or I don't. So I don't trust Him because of what I see. I don't trust Him because of how I feel. I trust Him because in my heart of hearts, I know who He is, and I know He is a good God. And I know He is not a harmful, abusive, sadistic God. And so I can trust Him. And so I have to trust Him then with all the things that don't make sense to me, all the ways that I would have done it. And I have to continually give those to God and let Him heal my heart from what occurred. And know that He is in just as much pain, if not more, because He knows more than I do. And we know in Ecclesiastes it says, with much knowledge comes much sorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, God knows a lot about why the person suicided more than I do. So He's probably in more pain than I am about it, because He knows more. He knows the course that person's life could have taken. He knows why He created him. He knows what He had in store. He knows what blessings He had that person stole from themselves. So God is in just as much, if not more, pain than we are about what happened.
I guess we don't ever think of things like that sometimes. Sometimes I think people don't realize that God does hurt too.
A lot. He hurts. He cries and hurts over His creation all the time.
That's what I think too. Mm-hmm. And I mean, there's obviously the joy when a baby's born, mm-hmm. and when people get married, and when people come to know Him. But mm-hmm. with that, there's also that other side that we don't think of.
Well, we see in the life of Jesus, if you study, you know, His life, and you see when He entered into His ministry, there is no indication I have not found of Him laughing. It doesn't mean I don't think He had wonderful moments with people.
Yeah.
But He entered into a big trial.
Yeah.
And so He knows what it's like to live here trying to do it the way it was originally intended. See, our world is upside down.
That's true.
Inside out and backwards.
Yep.
So He's trying to reorient it when it's going in the complete opposite direction. So He really understands what it's like down here.
I'm so glad that He did have a son, mm-hmm. that came down here,
yes.
so that He can understand.
Mm-hmm.
And I told that to my cousin's dad. I said, you know, he's a father, and he knows how you feel losing your kid, because he had to lose his. And when I've lost my three babies, that's kind of the only thing that got me through,
mm-hmm.
is he could relate to the pain of losing a son.
And see, you have to think this way, too, because this is another kind of like revelation that God gave me about life. And when I talk to women that have lost babies, or, you know, they're 8 weeks along and they lose the baby, you know, and I say to them, the only way to be with God for eternity is you have to become a human. So He's not as concerned. I mean, I think it's very sad when people don't live out of 80 years.
Sure.
I think it is. I'm not sure.
Okay. Sure.
But the most important thing to God is that it's created.
Yeah.
Because once a baby is created, even if it's a conception, they get to be with God.
Mm-hmm.
And so your cousin, right,
mm-hmm.
was created and knew Him. And so even though he died tragically, and this is certainly not God's plan for his life,
sure,
he gets to be with God. And that's the most important. It's more important to God that he's with him than whatever happened down here.
Oh, I agree with that. And that part gives me comfort to keep going,
mm-hmm.
and to be okay with what happened. Not that it's okay, but I guess the best way, just to be all right with
It's just acceptance.
That's it. Just accepting what happened, and now he's not in pain.
Not having to understand. Because, see, the grief and loss process is, remember, we start first in shock.
Yes.
Then we're in denial. This can't be true. We could have done that. It's got to be a mistake.
I had a dream that he actually, that it was a mistake, exactly. And it was so real. Mm-hmm. It was in my dream. He came over mm-hmm. after we had the funeral and everything, mm-hmm. and we were swimming and mm-hmm. having a good time at my house. And so, I you know how dreams can yeah. just feel, like, so real. Mm-hmm. And so I woke up like, no, he's still alive.
And, but some of that dream experiences, he's alive in heaven, and you experience that.
That's true.
And so, part of what our mind does to help us with the pain of a loss that big is it gives it to us in little doses, all right? And then it keeps trying to feel better. So in that denial state, we think we saw them on the street. Or we have to remind ourselves, they're passed. And we have to remind ourselves of it. That's part of our mind protecting.
Just like I got an email and the name was almost the same. And I'm like, oh my gosh, he sent me an email. And then I'm like,
yourself.
No, he didn't send me an email. It's another person with a very similar name sent me the email.
Right.
That's like, okay.
See, and the thing that is the hardest is not getting stuck in bargaining. Okay? Because bargaining is the coulda, shoulda, woulda, only then. And if we get into bargaining, we're going to get into guilt, condemnation, and shame. Because it's never going to be something positive toward us.
Right.
So once we start getting into the bargaining, we're going to think negatively about God, negatively about other people that we think should have done something, could have done something, negative things about the doctors, negative things about ourselves, you know, because we're trying to find a way that did not have to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And see, that's not within our ability to comprehend. We don't know where or how it even got there. All we know is that it got there, and that is God's realm. And so the bargaining has to be about, okay, I can do a learning curve where I can say, I've learned these things, and like what you're doing with your show today, that's one of the ways you're working on bargaining,
mm-hmm.
is you're offering other people information so it doesn't happen to them.
Right.
So that's a positive way to work through being able to do some kind of action to mitigate some of the pain. Because then we go into anger, right?
Yes.
We're tired of bargaining, yep. So now we're just going to be mad. Mad, oh my gosh,
yes.
Livid. You know, at everybody. Everything, and mad at God, and you know, you could have stopped this, and why didn't you do this? You know, I thought you cared about people. I can't believe you let this happen so easily, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then we're
or mad at the person who
yes,
did
absolutely.
It. How could you do
yes.
this to me?
How could you be selfish like this?
Yeah.
How could you have, like, really thought this was a good solution? How could you have not known the pain that you were causing?
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so then we get tired of that, but then we go into sadness where we're just flat, maybe. Or we're crying a lot, or we're just wanting to sleep a lot.
Right.
Because one of the things that happens in grief is you want to sleep. Because that's because grief is really hard work.
It sure
and
is.
It's exhausting for the mind and the soul and the spirit. So then we go back maybe to bargaining, then we go back to sad, then we go up to anger, then we go back to denial, then we go back to bargaining. So we're going through these until we finally land at acceptance. That, okay, I don't understand the course of all this. I don't understand why it had to happen that way. I don't comprehend any of that, but I do know, here's the good thing. I got to know him, and I know he's with God. And if people don't say, well, I don't know if that person's with God, then it's really important that you don't entertain whether or not you can figure that out.
Unfortunately, we ran out of time this week on the program, so please tune in next week as we continue this discussion.
Instead of thinking about number one, just yourself, think about number two, somebody else, because eventually number two will look out for you.